Om Agyanati Nirandhasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Shrestham Manamapi Shakti Putra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Gajam Rupurim Mataram Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Matavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natasmi. Vandeham shri guru shiataf parakamalam. Shri gurun vaishnavang shashi rupam sagrajatam sagana ragunatam vitam tam sajivam. Sadvaitam savadhutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam. Shri radha krishna padan sahagana lalita shri vishakha. Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Satchidanandanaya Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupano Gavarayate. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was asked to speak on Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. The devotees in this center, inspired by Vaisheshika Prabhu, I believe, yes, have particular affinity for Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his contributions. I was fortunate to be engaged for some years in compiling a work on Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is rather inaccurately known as the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's not totally inaccurate, but more precise, he is the prime, if not only, disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, only in the sense that in his own admission or his own statement from his own life, we can understand that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the one who actually understood the mission of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the mission and teachings. So that work came out to be quite large compared to most books. Of course, there are much bigger compilations, not on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but in general. There are works like The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire and Kane's Dharma Shastras. You're probably not aware of that, but it's a huge compendium of translations of Dharma Shastras with his commentary. But it is, in terms of volume, a major work. As I write in the introductory section, it is by no means comprehensive. It is only an introduction to the ocean of the teachings and pastimes of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One major I guess you could call it a lacuna, or it's a major factor that is missing in understanding Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as presented in this three-volume work, which is required to more fully understand the teachings and the legacy and of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is a similarly detailed work on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because, as stated in this Bhaktisiddhanta, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, as stated therein, as taken directly from the words of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. His, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's whole being, the whole purpose of his mission, his fighting to establish actual bhakti siddhanta, actual bhakti and actual bhakti siddhanta, the two are inseparable. It's all based on his total commitment to the service of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was ordered by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur told him that you, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, have come to this world for two purposes. One is to establish the pure chanting of the holy names. So this statement should be understood in the context of Vaishnavism as it was being practiced in Bengal at the time. There was much chanting of the holy names, but the understanding of Shuddhanam, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur outlined particularly in his work Harinama Chintamani, that was very much missing. There was much Namaparada, but very little understanding of or endeavoring towards Shuddhanama. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur told Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that you have come to this world for two purposes. One is to establish the pure chanting of the holy name, and the other is to establish Daivavanashram Dharma. This is another theme that Bhaktivinoda Thakur stressed in certain of his writings, in several of his writings, clearly in Chaitanya Shikamrita, that although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had famously said that Varnashram is external and to be renounced, it is nevertheless required, as is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam by Krishna himself, for persons who are not on the level of being able to just completely give up all material desires and become fully absorbed in Krishna immediately. So misunderstanding and misapplication of the principle of rejecting Varnashram and misunderstanding of the principle Harenama, Harenama, Eva Kevalam. These misunderstanding of these two principles had caused chaos within the purported sampradaya, or that which purported to be the sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu within Bengal. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had written about this and spoken about this, but the work of establishing it very solidly came to that legacy was left for him, or that task was left for, or given to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is known as the disciple of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, which he certainly is, but he's also the disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and practically Bhaktivinoda Thakur trained Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Vaishnavism from the very beginning. Gaur Kishore also made important contributions to this overwhelming personality who was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it's important to know who these personalities are. We have so much to learn. so much to unlearn. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his listing of the Parampara Acharyas, which is sung to this very day in the daily early in the morning in the various branches and sub-branches of the Gauriya Math, he sings Parampara Jano Bhalo Mate. We should know very well what is parampara. So that means we should know what is the principle of parampara, what are the teachings of parampara, and context specific to this particular kirtan in which he lists the names of the prominent acharyas in the Brahma, Madhva, Gauriya, Vaishnav Sampradaya, we should know who are the personalities, what are their contributions. That is traditional in any traditional Vedic Sampradaya, that in the beginning of the day one remembers all the previous acharyas, and in a family, then in the beginning of the day one will recount all the persons. And then it used to be that in Brahmana families they could recite the names of their forefathers all the way back to the rishi who spawned their gotra. So we should know who are these personalities, what are their contributions, why do we honor Bhaktivinoda Thakur, why do we honor Baladev Vidyabhushan. There is one devotee living in India, he's from Brazil, who's inspired by Baladev Vidyabhushan and is dedicating his life to finding out the lost manuscripts of Baladev Vidyabhushan and translating them and bringing them to the awareness of the public. Of course, there are not many people interested in this. There are many more people interested in cartoons of Krishna than serious understanding of Parampara Jano Bhalo Mate, of serious understanding of who are these great personalities who have brought Krishna consciousness to the world. They're not ordinary personalities. They are Mahabhagavato, Mahan. This term is used in Srimad Bhagavatam. In a description of Sri Prahlad Maharaj, that Prahlad Maharaj is great even among Mahabhagavatas. Bhagavata means a devotee of Bhagavan is not an ordinary person, is a great person. And there is Mahabhagavata. Then Mahabhagavata. And that Mahabhagavato Mahan is very greatest, very exalted personality that we can hardly imagine. Srila Prabhupada, we can hardly imagine their status. In regard to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was perceived by his disciples that such a great person hardly... In one day of Brahma, hardly one or two such personalities will manifest on the earth. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's described as such, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur has to be in the same category also. About the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is stated, Brahmanda Tarite Shakti Dhare Jane Jane, that every one of them, all of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has the potency to deliver the whole universe. But nevertheless, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after his performing manifest pastimes in this world, along with his many associates, he sent some particular associates to actually engage in this work. Most of his associates he sent them for preaching, but gradually he manifested his pastimes in this world through various preachers. Once Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk, I believe it was in Chennai, or maybe it was in Nellore. Either in Chennai or Nellore. And one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Achyutananda Swami, said to Srila Prabhupada that some of your God brothers say that if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had wanted Krishna consciousness preached in the West, he would have gone there himself, criticizing in this way Srila Prabhupada. What are you preaching in the West for? Srila Prabhupada, on hearing this, stopped, stuck his cane firmly into the ground and said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not go to the West because he wanted to give me the credit. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has his plan, and he unfolds that gradually, the spreading of Krishna consciousness throughout the world. In the Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srila Prabhupada had featured the paintings of the recent acharyas, the photograph of himself, the painting of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, painting of Srila Gorky Jodas Babaji Maharaj, and the painting of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the caption that went with the photo of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that he is the pioneer of preaching Krishna consciousness worldwide in the modern age. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was raised, he was part of what at that time was, now also, but that term is not so much used now, what is called in Bengal, especially in Calcutta, the Bhadralok, which means the gentlemanly class. Bhadralok you can translate more or less as gentleman. Young men, they were from well-to-do families of Bengal, and they were educated in British schools and colleges. So they had an Indian, and not just Indian, but Bengali background. Even today, the Bengali, what shall we say, the Bengali culture is quite, although it's definitely Indian, it's a quite distinct subgroup. So, although Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his cultural, of course, his roots are in the spiritual world, but we're talking here from the external perspective. He had his roots in rural Bengal, and he came to the city, to Calcutta, for education. And he was exposed to the British plan for educating the Indian youth, especially the Bengali youth, so that they could be exposed to the greatness of Western civilization and culture, by which young men in Bengal, the educated ones, grew up despising their own culture. That's what the idea was. But it didn't always work fully because, whatever the reason may be, they didn't fully reject it, and many tried to make some kind of adjustment between traditional Indian culture. They recognized, if that's the right word, that there were problems in Indian culture, but at the same time they didn't want to fully give it up, and therefore some attempts to modernize Hinduism or make some adjustment came up. Prominent in Bengal at that time among the Bhadralok was the Brahma Dharma. It was supposed to be a new religion which combined the best of Hinduism with the best of not really Christianity but more Western humanistic liberalism. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also attracted to that for some time. There was much intellectual ferment as young Indians, they were exposed to the culture of the West. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was part of this, and anyway, to make a long story short, he at some point he converted, if that's the right term, to Vaishnavism, to Gauriya Vaishnavism. He read Chaitanya Bhagavat, which nowadays you can get Chaitanya Bhagavat in printed, it's widely printed, widely available in Bengali, English, Russian, or whatever. But at that time it wasn't very much available, but when he read that, he underwent a transformation. Among the educated people in Bengal, by educated I mean in English education, otherwise the traditional education prior to the British period meant Sanskrit education. The Bhadralok, the youth of the Bhadralok, they particularly despised Vaishnavism, because what was going on in the name of Vaishnavism, in the name of Bengal, was much degraded. We should take note in our ISKCON that we not degrade. We may think it's impossible that we degrade. Well, you might have thought that about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who personally came, and the movement degraded. Why should anything degrade? That's the work of Maya. So, step by step, you may not even notice, like the frog in the water being slowly boiled. He doesn't notice until it's too late that he's boiled, getting boiled to death. The temperature just slowly increases. So it may be small things, just like, when was that? It was just yesterday, was it, that we were here? Yesterday morning. And you may say a small thing. I noticed that the men and the women were all sitting mixed up. Small thing. You may say, small thing, but it's not traditionally done. There's a reason for that. The unrestrained mixing of the sexes, that doesn't mean you're having unrestricted mixing, but it's just, it's a concession toward the modern, or it's moving in the direction of the modern idea that, well, separating the sexes doesn't matter. Why follow all these old rules? And gradually, you don't notice, and then gradually, I've seen on ISKCON property, men and women greeting each other, embracing, as is often done in modern Western culture, which is uncivilized, but it's done in, it's considered, well, we're all the same, and we don't see the body. I know what they're thinking, but it's degraded. So, and step by step, there's fall down. So we have to be very careful. The the condition of Vaishnavism was very bad at the time, that in the name of Vaishnavism, there was much illicit sex. I've given some overview of that in this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, and the response to that, particularly of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So the young educated youth, they grow up to despise that. The one major claim of the Christians in their attempt to convert the Hindus, that your religion is very degraded and Christianity is very moral and your Krishna is very immoral and our Jesus is very moral and like this. Therefore, Brahma Dharma and Ram Krishna Mission and so many things, they try to make some adjustment. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was not from a Vaishnava family. In Bengal, the two main cultural divisions among Hindus are quite marked, it's still prominent today, despite Ramakrishna's Jato Mot Toto Pot, is the division between Shaktas, the worshippers of Durga and Kali, and on one hand, and the Vaishnavas, which in Bengal means worshippers of Radha Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was raised in a Shakta family. Shaktas, they worship Durga and they tend to eat meat, and in among the Vaishnavas in Bengal, they wouldn't eat meat, they'd only eat fish. But the Shaktas, they eat meat also. So that was, and sacrifice animals to Kali. And Shaiva influence, not much in Bengal at that time. These are the three main trends, we can say, in what is nowadays called Hinduism. Shaiva, Vaishnav, and Shakta. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was raised in a Shakta family, but it's seemingly he heard about he thought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name was known throughout Bengal, but his name had been blackened as what kind of religion did he start. But when Bhaktivinoda Thakur heard from a Vaishnava about the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became eager to find out more. He procured a manuscript of Chaitanya Bhagavat, and after reading that, it was a revelation for him. And then he became eager to read Srimad Bhagavatam, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are based on Srimad Bhagavatam. So for that purpose, he learned Sanskrit. Up to that time, he had not learned Sanskrit. Mostly Brahmanas would learn Sanskrit. And certainly the Bhadralok, they weren't going to be learning Sanskrit. Because at that time, whatever, Srimad Bhagavatam itself, of course, is in Sanskrit, and whatever commentaries were there, available in mostly in manuscript form, not in printed form, and in Bengali script, but in Sanskrit. So he learned Sanskrit for the specific purpose by the way, by this time he was already married and having children, not a youth anymore. There's so much to say about it. So he studied this and he underwent a transformation, and he became a preacher of Vaishnavism, especially within his own circle. Now, gradually, devotees in the West are, we can say, discovering Bhaktivinoda Thakur, mostly via his songs. and mostly the songs of Sharanagati and a few others. But actually he wrote many, many more songs. One point is that the songs, the devotees are appreciating in the English translation, but in the Bengali original, they're much more touching. The poetry especially doesn't fare well in translation. Anything which is translated, it's unlikely that you're going to get you can't get the original flavor, because you have to know the language, the original language. You may get a translation which is in some sense accurate, but the flavor, and remember that ultimately flavor is what we're looking for, rasa, you won't get that. It's difficult to describe, but those who know Bengali or Sanskrit, and they can understand the difference between the English translation. The English translation may have all the facts right, all the information, but the feel of it won't be the same. And poetry is not meant simply to convey information, but to not just touch the heart, but to pierce the heart and make the head spin. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's poetry certainly has that effect. Of course, Gaurīya Vaiṣṇavism, he was by no means the first poet. There have been literally hundreds of Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava poets. But he was unique in the sense that he wrote many poems which are suitable. When we say poems, of course, when they're sung, they're kirtans. We call them kirtans. Traditionally, the vast majority of Gaurīya poetry, kirtans, yeah, it's the same. It's written for singing, actually. The vast majority of that is on derived, based on Krishna's pastimes. Most of it is modeled after the Gita Govinda of Jayadev. There are descriptions about the past. There's also Gaura Kirtan describing the pastimes and beautiful form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Narottam Das, he also wrote some instructional, didactic kirtans, Prema Bhakti Chandrika and Prarthana. Therein, of course, is much of his own personal longing for attaining the highest states of Krishna consciousness that is described. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also describes that. But he is unique in giving much instructional poetry that is suitable for beginners or even pre-beginners in Krishna consciousness. And many of his songs are not so very well known, but he deals with all kinds of different anarthas. He deals with them in different songs. For instance, the desire to be a sannyasi, the desire to be a yogi, the desire to be a guru. He deals with all of these as various anarthas. Not that he was intrinsically against being a guru, because he himself, although he sings Amito Vaishnav e Buddhi Hoile Amani Nahobo Ami Patishta Asha Ashiya Hridoy Dushibe Hoibo Nirayagami. He sings that if I think that I am a Vaishnava, I will become proud. I won't become humble. The desire for prestige will contaminate my heart and I'll become a candidate for going to hell. So he goes on and he finishes this song by saying, Tai Shishatava Takya Sharvada Na Loibe Pujaka. He says, therefore I will remain always your servant. I will not accept honor or worship from others. Tai Shishata, I remain always your disciple. I won't accept it. But he did accept disciples. But he was warning against the mentality of thinking, I am a guru. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in a rather humorous way, said that if anyone thinks I am a guru, then in this word, guru, the first uka is dropped out. In other words, instead of being g-u-r-u, it becomes g-u-r-u, becomes goru, which means cow. You're not a guru. If one thinks I'm a guru, he's not a guru. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave one amazing exposition of this, which is quite famous, on how can a Vaishnava be a guru. He stated that if a Vaishnava becomes a guru, he ceases to be a Vaishnava. But if he doesn't become a guru, then the parampara is finished. Dilemma. So he said that my guru has ordered me to preach this Krishna consciousness and be a guru. So what should I do? Should I be artificially humble or should I follow the order of my guru? This one of the several very famous lectures of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he saw a great need for re-establishing Gauravani, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is described namo bhaktivinodaya sachit ananda namine gaura shakti swarupaya rupa anuga varayate. He is offered obeisance as his name is Sachidanand. He is the very form of the power of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the best of the followers of Rupa Goswami. So that description of him is expanded in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he is a Namaste Gauravani Shimurtaye Dinatarine Rupa Anuga Virudha Pasidhanta Twantaharine. He is, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is described as Namaste Gaura. He is the very form of the teachings or the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the uplifter of the low and fallen. And he is the remover of the darkness of the wrong conclusions propagated in the name of Rupa Goswami. So we see the continuation there. The teachings of Rupa Goswami were at that time much misunderstood and misapplied. And within the whole world of the intelligentsia in Bengal at that time, it was a time of much confusion. With on one hand, the British or the intelligent, the British trying to push their agenda, and on the other hand, there were There were Indian intellectuals who, especially in Bengal, for some reason the British concentrated their educational efforts in Bengal. Maybe they thought Bengalis were very intelligent, but strategically it may not have been such a good... Maybe they were trying to contain them by educating them, but it seemed to backfire because you got personalities like Aurobindo and Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose, who they took the British education and said to hell with the British. So they concentrated their efforts there, and so there was this turmoil going on with different kinds of religious organizations trying to, not only in Bengal, but trying to make some modernized kind of Hinduism. It was around this time that Hindus, especially under the, a major person in all this was Swami Vivekananda, who adopted the title. He was the first, I don't know if he actually said this, but he adopted the spirit of Gar se kaho hum Hindu hai. Otherwise, previously Hindus, they didn't think of themselves as Hindus. They were called Hindus by others, but they did. There was no term that they used. So, Gar se kaho hum Hindu hai means say it with pride, we are Hindus. So that's a fairly modern slogan. I think, when was that coined? It seems to be, I don't know. What does it matter? So there was political turmoil and social turmoil with urbanization and the land reforms the British made. They threw people off the land, and then they destroyed the weaver class in Bengal by cutting off their thumbs so that the British factories could prosper, because the Bengali weavers were so expert in making fine muslin, and the traditional agricultural started making cash crops like indigo and jute, and the whole place was in a turmoil. So in this bubbling cultural cauldron pot, there was so much confusion. Who's became known as Ramakrishna, he tried to bring everything together with his slogan Jato Mot Toto Pot, which I commented on 2 days ago, the nonsense of all this. Jato, as many opinions, that many paths, or as it's commonly phrased, all paths lead to the same goal. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he met this Ramakrishna on, it seems, at least two occasions, and predictably, he was highly unimpressed with him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he shocked the intellectuals of his time by promoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, because they thought this is the epitome of degradation. Actually, it is the epitome of, it is the highest. Anarpite chiring chirat karunya avatirno kalau samapyate monatajvala rasa swabhakti shriyam hari purata sundara dyuti kadamba sandipita sada hridaya khandare spurtu vashachinandana. What was not given in a very, very long time, not since one day of Brahma previously, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give the topmost resplendent rasa, taste of service to himself. May that son of Sachi, the darling of Sachi, ever be situated within the core of your heart. That blessing is given by Srila Rupa Goswami. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are the highest by the effect of Kali Yuga. It's the manifestation of what was going on under the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seemed to be the lowest. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur did a tremendous service in making that known to others through his writings. And in his writings, many devotees, they're discovering him, so to speak, in his songs, especially Sharanagati, although, like I said, there are many other songs apart from his Sharanagati series. But there are many writings also of his which were unique and groundbreaking. There had not been such works in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. The two works of his, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said that these should be translated in all the languages and made available to the thinking people of the world. These two works, Chaitanya Shikamrita and Jaiva Dharma. In Chaitanya Shikamrita, he analyzes almost, you could say, in the manner of a sociologist or an anthropologist, the different levels of human civilization, showing that although there is a modern anthropological opinion. I don't know if it can really be called anthropological. It's more of an opinion that man starts off by worshipping many gods. Then he comes to worship one god. Then he comes to worship some impersonal understanding of the Supreme. And then come to the highest level, which is just manifesting now. When he understands there's no God, there's nothing beyond matter. So this is inverse theological development. And actually we see that in Kali Yuga. not exactly, but the idea that we progress from theism to atheism. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he presented in Chaitanya Shikamrita, he starts off by presenting the stages of civilization in terms of theism, and how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings present the highest theism, and an analysis in a very, what we might say, systematic manner, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. This, although written in Bengali, it was presumably meant for Bengali thinkers of the time who were exposed to both to Western and traditional Indian patterns of thought. But this is suitable, very, very, very suitable for people in the modern age who like to treat everything very analytically. It's very much part of the Western psyche that has been inculcated as part of the scientific way of thinking. I guess starting with Francis Bacon and scientific methodology of analyzing everything, and that was later applied to fields of knowledge which had not previously existed. Just like that, psychology, sociology, anthropology. So it's very suitable for the modern analytical methodology. It's also quite noticeable how Indians, even to the present day, even if they are raised in, well, education in India means what we would call scientific, or more precisely, technological education. Most Indians are trained to be engineers. Some of them become doctors. Although recently someone told me that some of the smarter parents are telling their children, there's no need to go for all this higher education. Get a good start in a political party early. Let the other people work and you just become a politician and take all their money. If you really want to be successful. You see, now the incoming prime minister, what's his... When Indian people meet, they say, what is your educational qualification? What are they going to say to him? The previous prime minister, he had high educational qualification. The present one, not. So that just goes to show. You don't need a high education. Anyway, people, much stress on what they call science, which it's more like technology, but they call it science. But the mentality or the mindset is very different from the Western one, in which so-called critical thinking, in the Western education, they give the people idea that they're thinking for themselves. Ha, ha, ha. in India, still the tendency of that very old and deep culture of receive education is to be received. The English word education, it's derived from the Greek or Latin, but it means to bring out that which is inside. So there's the idea of stirring your thinking process. Whereas in the Indian system, or the traditional Indian system, one learns. It doesn't mean that one doesn't have any power of thinking. The traditional Indian intellectual culture prior to Jato Mot Totopot was very much disputative. Debates were... philosophical debates and debates on topics such as linguistics and poetics. That was very much central to the intellectual culture. This Chaitanya Shikamrita, it was definitely presenting Krishna consciousness in a manner that was definitely aimed at the analytical Western way of thought. And that analytical way of thought, that's also not necessarily foreign to the Vedic culture. We find there is also Sankhya, Nyaya in these systems of the Vedic schools, that is there, but one, of course, this would have to be analyzed more. But it seems that with the spread of bhakti, that the tendency to just accept blindly, which is not at all the culture of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, He didn't say to Arjuna, listen Arjuna, I'm God, believe what I say or burn in hell forever. He doesn't say that. He says, he speaks to Arjuna as an intelligent person, even though Arjuna sometimes he doesn't seem to be very intelligent in the way he keeps on asking the same question. Although even to ask such questions is beyond the intelligence level of most people nowadays. But Krishna, he wants Arjuna to understand and then follow. He doesn't say follow or else you're finished. I'm God and I'm going to chuck you in hell and never see you. We'll look down from heaven and enjoy seeing you burn in hell forever. There's no... So that is there, but a misapplication of bhakti without siddhanta. Bhakti with only vinod but without siddhanta means that it's going to become degraded. Bhakti is not meant to be, it's never meant to be propagated as only with vinod, the pleasure of bhakti, without siddhanta. Bhakti siddhanta is required to substantiate bhakti vinod. Just as Jiva Goswami, he substantiated Rupa Goswami in his writings. Jiva Goswami substantiated Rupa Goswami. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he presented Krishna consciousness in a unique way in Chaitanya Shikamrita, and in Jaiva Dharma, in the form of a novel, he presents how various philosophies which were prominent in Bengal in those days, how they are met by the Gaurya Vaishnava Siddhanta. And he features impersonalism, Shaktism, Islam, Nyaya, logic, and various schools. And in both of these books, and in Harinam Chintamani, he comes to the conclusion of the highest level of devotional service. And in Sharanagati, he brings it ultimately to the conclusion of the highest love, of being situated in one's form as a gopi in the spiritual world. So Chaitanya Shikamrita begins from a logical analysis of a systematic analysis of the of human society and how civilization begins with morality. He takes it from atheistic morality, then to theistic morality, and up and up, and how this culminates in the Unatajvala rasa, the topmost resplendent rasa of service to Radha and Krishna in the form of a transcendental maidservant. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's right there. These are two very important books. There are so many important writings he has given. This requires to be made known to the world. We have the books of Srila Prabhupada. We look forward to the day when the universities of the world will... In the universities of the world, there will be multiple departments studying various aspects of the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. There's much, as I said, the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we can't understand his contribution fully and properly. There's a major lacuna in the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav in that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not described in depth. That's a major work awaiting anyone who wants to take it up, to make an in-depth study of the contributions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I would like to do it, but it seems unlikely I'm going to get the opportunity in this lifetime, because there are other important services that I am engaged in. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we can better understand who is Srila Prabhupada, what is his contribution, if we understand it in relation to the contribution and mission of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which we have to understand in relation to. It's all a continuous flow in relation to the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's called the Bhaktivinoda Dhara. which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Bhaktivinoda dhara kakana ruddha hoibena, the flow, the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that will never be obstructed, that will continue to flow. There were his prose writings, his poetical writings, and his active contribution in preaching Krishna consciousness, in the practice of Krishna consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur revived the pure preaching of Krishna consciousness. This was later ratcheted up to a great degree by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then in a massive explosion all over the world by our own Sri Guru Pada Padma Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So we should understand Srila Prabhupada. We can better understand Srila Prabhupada in relationship to his gurus. He presented himself as a servant of his guru, who Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as any guru will do, will present himself as a servant of his guru. The so-called Ritvik movement, they want to present Srila Prabhupada as if in isolation from his gurus. They say that, well, Prabhupada said this, taking some things out of context, and this means that there should be no more initiating guru after Srila Prabhupada. And they'll take Srila Prabhupada's writings and they seem to think that it is wrong to try to understand Srila Prabhupada's writings in relation to the writings of the previous acharyas, whereas they're only to be understood in relation to the writings of the previous acharyas, because that is the function of a guru, to transmit that which was previously given. So in this way, they want to convert Srila Prabhupada into a figure like Sai Baba, who has no antecedents, and who is just a figure who pops up out of nowhere. But this is not at all the way to understand a guru must be understood in relation to the parampara in which he appears. It's an insult to the parampara and an absurdity to try to relegate the previous acharyas to just some kind of just some names in a book. Rather, we can understand the greatness of an acharya in his presenting what the previous acharyas have given. And of course, Srila Prabhupada presented himself in that manner. Srila Prabhupada presented himself that, I am simply giving what I have heard from my Guru Maharaj. And what did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say? I am simply presenting what I have heard from my... This is their absurdity. We can better understand how Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the pioneer of preaching, of the worldwide preaching of Krishna consciousness. In the very same year that Srila Prabhupada appeared in this world, in 1896, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent his some copies of his book, The Life and Precepts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He sent that out to various universities in the Western world, and he sent some of his works to prominent intellectuals in the Western world. There was a letter from that's still extant. There's a letter from Henry Thoreau. Is that how it's pronounced? Thoreau. I guess in French it would be pronounced Thoreau, but once it got into English, it became Thoreau. Expressing his thanks to Bhaktivinoda Thakur for having sent him his writings, one of his books. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he recognized in the British interaction with India, which is an extremely complex series of interactions at many levels, which various scholars are still trying to wonder what happened and what was going on, and it's still going on. Some scholars have noted that only among the Western people, only the British could have ruled the Indian, because only they had such a hierarchical concept of society. In that time, there was the upper class. They were the rulers, notwithstanding the... that gradually came in, the universal franchise and all that. When the British first went to India, they had very strongly this sense of the upper class aristocracy. So it was a very, very complex interaction, and there was a deliberate attempt to foist Western values on Indians to try to make them, in the estimation of the British, civilized, in the estimation of the Westerners, to be the Western way of thinking is most civilized, and Western, particularly British. After all, Charles Darwin was an Englishman. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not the only one to recognize that in this attack on what we could call Indian culture, in the challenge also lay a great opportunity. That, okay, now we learned English, and that there's communication between the West and the East, we can go and preach to them too. He recognized that. He wasn't the only one. Among Vaishnavas and non-Vaishnavas, some recognized that this beginning of globalization is a term which we often think of in terms of modern corporations, globalization really came in a big way with colonialization of the European powers, among whom, of course, the British were prominent. Some Indians recognized, well, this is an opportunity for us to get out there and do our thing also. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he recognized that. And he was very hopeful in that these Western people, they're very philosophical and thoughtful, and if we present them Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, then these Western intellectuals, by virtue of being intelligent and philosophical and analytical, they will recognize, if it's presented in a suitable manner, they will recognize that actually these teachings are supreme. There's nothing superior to this. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamidam Tadradharona Para. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya are summarized, that I just spoke on 2 days ago. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajeshatanyas, etc. These are the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we accept them as supreme. Now, of course, especially in the world of Sanskrit, it's not enough just to say that, well, we accept it as supreme. It has to be established as supreme. So it's understood it's not just some kind of slogan that, well, we support Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but it has to be established. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, especially Jiva Goswami, did that. And then maybe 350 years later, Bhaktivinoda Thakur again did it in an altered cultural context. So he was very hopeful that the people of the world, if it was presented to them in a what they would call reasonable manner, that they would accept that, yes, this is the highest teaching. And it seems that Srila Prabhupada also had that hope, that if we present this to the thoughtful people of the Western world, they will accept this. Which is one reason why he promoted a widespread book distribution and why he wanted to preach to the Western intellectuals. The British themselves, they feared, they noticed that many intellectuals from the West, including British, when they came to understand, especially the teachings of Vedanta, what a high understanding this is. And they were afraid of that, and therefore they made a systematic campaign to rubbish and trivialize everything India and India, which is going on to the present day. For instance, if there is a riot in Los Angeles, it's presented in the press as an aberration. If there's a riot in India or Africa, it's presented, well, it's just normal. What can you expect of such people? It's going on to the present day that India is always presented as dirty, unordered, poverty-stricken, caste-ridden, and so many things. Although Americans, I know because I see Americans go to India, they can't tolerate, they don't have the level of tolerance to live in crowded conditions. The average American, if the electricity goes off for 10 minutes, they consider it a disaster. They don't have any tolerance of any physical discomfort. So undoubtedly there are many deep social problems in India today. Is that true in America also? What do you think? There are deep social problems here. It's going on to the present day that what they call Hinduism is presented as being something very backward. So our movement has a great debt to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and to all the great acharyas and to Srila Prabhupada to not only sit in our rooms and practice our Krishna consciousness, and not only to distribute books, which might, it's a great credit for this center that you are distributing many books, but we have to, in all ways, communicate this message. And, yeah, we shouldn't just distribute things, books, and think, well, that's our job done. We have a target and we've fulfilled it. But to communicate this message to others, which means talking to them in a cultivating people's understanding and demonstrating it also, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he started that, revived this idea that we have to establish Daivavan Ashram. He gave that charge to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who did so to some extent. And Srila Prabhupada outlined a whole plan of spiritual social reform. So we have a great legacy and a great duty. Srila Prabhupada said that it's not enough simply to praise your guru, but you have to actually do his work. So we have much work to do in the service of these great acharyas. If you only distribute books, that's also glorious. It's certainly not a bad thing, and I'm certainly not saying you're doing anything wrong. You definitely, please do it more and more and more. But we have to see that after the books are distributed, we have to meet people and encourage them to read them and encourage them to understand, just like you're distributing so many sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. And to me, don't mind me saying this, but it seems absurd that you're distributing sets of Bhagavatam and not in most cases, not following up with the people who they're distributed to and saying, encourage them to read, and what is your understanding, and helping them to understand this and then adopt it in their life. If they're willing to buy a set of Srimad Bhagavatam, means they're prime candidates for becoming full-fledged devotees. So, to be devotees, then the devotees themselves have to be devotees. That may sound axiomatic, but we're not just in the number counting business. We're not like Christians or something who, if you make 1,000 converts, they'll give you a crore of rupees or something like this. It's not just a number, who's got the most followers, but we want to see who's actually following. Our while wanting to bring many people in, we have to see quality as well as quantity. And quality doesn't mean that we're only bringing in people with master's degrees who are earning five-figure salaries. That's not the meaning of quality. Quality means how we're practicing Krishna consciousness with all seriousness. So, much work to do. The legacy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his own personal contribution in terms of his writings, no one to date has researched that. There has been some research into his life and his activities. The book has been published on that. That's been published in Uriya. That's a start. There's so much work to do to understand his monumental teachings, which form the basis of the present Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there unless there are any questions. You're holding the microphone. Does that mean you plan to ask a question? Oh, there's a video about Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Srimad Bhagavatam and speaking from
you. Oh, I see. I spoke on Bhagavatam last night, you may have noticed. Yes. You'd asked me to speak on purchasing Bhagavatam. That came up automatically. You can cut that out.
Yes.
And you can use that for your clip.
And we have one more promotional which we do it on every Sunday.
Yeah, okay. So are there any questions? I don't know if I'm ready to answer questions because, like I say, there's much research to do into the teachings and legacy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's much work to do. Bhaktivinoda was a unique figure. Some of his teachings are unique. His Harinam Chintamani in the study of the Shuddhanam, Namabhash, Namaparad, that's something unique. There's no such analysis prior to that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he spoke about Namaparad. Niraparadhe Namaloile Pai Premadhan. If one chants the holy name without offense, he achieves the treasure of love of Krishna. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur went into great detail in this subject. For instance, his finding and establishing the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's so many contributions. So please.
Can you tell how can I know if I qualify to study books by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur?
How can you tell if you're qualified to study?
Yeah.
Traditionally, one would not study any literature without permission from his guru. Not only that, but one would be taught by his guru. Nowadays, things are somewhat different. The printing press has changed many things. So has Rasbihari Lal and Sons. With their profit-motivated, horrible translations, which they foist on the Vaishnava. Well, I guess people go and buy them. That's also a factor. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada gave the order to all of his disciples and in the disciplic succession to study his books. That is, of course, part of the process of being a disciple. Swadhyay, or self-study, is also mentioned. It's part of the Veda. It's not that only one is taught by the... Of course, one should always think I'm being taught by the Guru, but there is also self-study of Shastra. That's also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, for instance. But that should still be there, that one should take permission from one's guru. Srila Prabhupada, he also gave the order within his books to study the books of the previous acharyas. That's also there. But in general, we always recommend read all of Srila Prabhupada's books, then go on to others. Some books may be useful in between, just like the Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness, which has my name on it, but practically it's a summary of what we were taught by Srila Prabhupada and how to practice Krishna consciousness. Yeah, there's not enough time in one life, is there? As Srila Prabhupada said, that if anyone was to start now and to start reading all the Vaishnav literature, he could not finish in his lifetime.
Maharaj, I have a request. Normally after a talk on Sunday, we do chant one round. Would you chant one round with us?
Yeah. I'll croak one round with you. Any other questions?
Yeah. Maharaj, it was a wonderful lecture which you heard for the last few minutes.
You only heard the last few minutes. How do you know the rest of it was maybe not wonderful?
Almost an hour or so. Huh? Yeah.
It's a formality to say thank you for the wonderful class. But then, if there is an exceptionally wonderful class, how do you express appreciation for it? If every class is wonderful.
I heard you on Friday.
All right, we'll let you off this time.
So my question was this, so you have been in India for a very long time and to very...
Yeah, considering our short lifespan in this Kali Yuga.
And you have seen lots of ups and downs and political disturbances. So can you relate one incident in your life which you think your faith in Krishna was tested?
Every moment our faith in Krishna is tested. Maya doesn't sleep. Not one moment, not one incident, every moment. Every moment we have the choice to surrender to Krishna or to fail to do so. So if you're asking for one anecdote in which my faith in Krishna was tested, that's always there. If we think that Maya only sometimes tests us, we're in Maya.
Mm.
Hare Krishna, right? Please accept my humble obeisance.
Hare Krishna.
But I was wondering if you can explain a little more about the Daiva Varnasrama.
Oh, explain about that. Explain about Daiva Varnasrama, that's a very big topic. There's a CD of several lectures I've given on that. If you really want, you can take that. There's about, 50 hours of me talking about it. There's much more to say, and there's much more to do also. But it does begin with talking about it. First of all, the thinking, feeling, and willing. Shravan Manan Nididhyasana. So, if we think about it, we hear about it, we start to think about it, and then we think, well, maybe we should do it. And that has happened with some of my disciples, because I'm speaking about this, and they think about it, and they think, well, let's do it, and they're doing it. So, it is a major topic. It is difficult to understand how we can establish it in the world, but I'm not sure if that's on that CD, because that was fairly recent that I spoke on. That was earlier this year that I spoke on Varnashram, going into uncharted waters. We're sailing into uncharted waters. We're not exactly sure what we're doing, but we're going forward with faith in Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. How to establish it in the modern age. They're all my lectures?
Yes.
Okay. I see. I'm asking because there was some idea that, because Savyasachi Prabhu also gave about, he has also has a CD of about 50 lectures in Hindi on Varnashram. So there was some idea that'd be published in one CD, but it didn't happen, it seems. Is that here also, Savyasachi's Hindi Varnashram? I know. I usually carry that around with me in India also. Mm. Well, everyone here understands English, so it's more or less the same thing. I guess what he's saying is a lot of what he heard from me. And it's But the devotees are doing research also, because to establish these projects, some research, a lot of research is required in various fields. Mm. So then, you want to show the videos now?
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Swami Maharaj ki.
Jai.